I had a sergeant that called me and he asked why I asked for another unit. And I was kind of dumbfounded why he asked why I was asked for another unit. And basically he was concerned, and this is going to sound really strange, but he was concerned basically about the optics from other officers that we were asking for another unit. We couldn't handle it ourselves.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I say that way too much, but I'm pretty good at it. And this is not a recorded thing. This is me every single time, just a cappella, letting it rip, brother. You know what I mean? But today we have with us a great guest, and I'll let him tell us how we came to being on a podcast together, because a little bit of an interesting story that people find or get a kick out of. But tell us about who you are and what you do and how we ended up here together.
Yeah, sure. So just a little bit really quickly about myself. I am a husband and a father, Christian. I'm a Marine veteran. I also, right after I got out of the Marines, I went to school to get my engineering degree, mechanical engineering degree. And I figured what better field to use that degree than law enforcement. So I pursued a career in law enforcement. I did that for about a year and thought that maybe I should try this whole engineering thing out. So I left, went and worked as a wind tunnel test engineer. I hated that. I missed just being a police officer. I missed that marshal type community. So after about a year being a wind tunnel test engineer, I left that and went back to the previous agency I was with before, which is where I'm at now. And so I just really love that that career field, and I enjoyed it. It's very fulfilling. I just didn't really feel like I was getting a lot of meaning out of being an engineer. But so I came back. And then since I've been back, I also started a company called Defenders and Disciples. It's a training company. I really enjoy teaching people how to shoot. And so I got my NRA instructor certification. I started teaching some NRA courses, and COVID hit and people didn't really want to meet very much, and ammo prices went through the roof. I still wanted to teach people how to shoot and firearm safety and things like that. So I started my YouTube channel, Defenders and Disciples on YouTube, and it had got pretty successful fairly quickly. A couple of videos got a lot of views. And so then how we got introduced, I guess, is while I was on patrol one day, I was just thinking about complacency. I went to an alarm call, and when we got there, we had an open door, and the guy I was with, we were going to clear it out, and we requested another unit to come to us because it looked like it was founded. And so we requested the unit to come to us. They got there, we cleared it out. And then I had a sergeant that called me, and he asked why I asked for another unit. And I was kind of dumbfounded why I was asked for another unit. And basically he was concerned, and this is going to sound really strange, but he was concerned basically about the optics from other officers that we were asking for another unit. We couldn't handle it ourselves. And I basically told him, I was like, well, if this was a founded burglary and there was someone inside, maybe that other officer may not be there by the time we're clearing it out, but at least we'll have someone en route while we're clearing it out. Well, that started to get me thinking about complacency and complacency in law enforcement, where we got guys that get sent to these alarm calls and they usually send two units. And then oftentimes they will disregard one of those other units. And so I started writing a document called Complacency Kills. And the reason I called it Complacency Kills is when I was in the Marines and Marine Security Forces, they had the sign Complacency Kills all over the place. And the idea was, you know, if you get complacent, you can die. And so I titled it that. I just started making a list of things, of rules or kind of just general advice. I tried to make it good advice. I don't know. I mean, I've sent it to some other people and got their input on it. They said it's a good list. So, and then I sent it to you guys and which y'all thought about it and you invited me on the show.
I think that every person or almost every person that comes on this show as a street cop survivor, somebody who is involved in some significant catastrophic incident where they almost lost their life in the line of duty, constantly repeats the same thing, as taboo as it sounds. That is the thing that will kill you. And it almost killed me, was being complacent. And I think that sometimes it probably just sounds monotonous to us because you hear it so much, because I don't think there's a real example. These men and women who teach this stuff typically don't have a good story to create the emotion to go along with why complacency kills. I mean, it's a stark reminder when I advise our audience here or people who come to our training classes that I think it's a good idea that you all go home and watch 15, 20 videos of police officers getting killed in the line of duty. And don't watch the ones with the fucking two old guys who are like, right? Like, yeah, that fucking, I don't know if you've ever seen those are unbelievable, but, and I don't mean in a good way. I'm talking about just go on fucking Reddit, YouTube, where you got to go. And I don't know, whatever other websites show videos. I'm not somebody who trolls the internet for videos like that. So I don't know, break.com seems to ring a bell. I don't know. But you would find these videos in there. You know, they're hard to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, they are significantly difficult to watch, but they're worth it because you will take the moment to understand what went wrong here. And when you're presented that set of facts in that situation, you will not act the same way. Police posts, my friend Adam Hadari, who's running Effective Fitness Training and all that stuff, they're doing a really good job and I fucking love it. I'm so happy he's doing it. So if you follow him on Instagram, and man, I'm hoping the right thing, because I love the guy, Effective Combat Training, Effective Fitness Training. Adam, I'm sorry. I know we're fucking friends. They'll be at our conference. They have a booth there. I have two booths actually. But what they're doing is they're showing videos of police officers in physical fights and then showing the solution if you find yourself in that situation, which is fucking genius, because we are doing the same thing. We tailor our programs around looking what you're going to encounter in the field.
Yeah.
And then knowing that that's going to happen through history, showing you what to do to significantly reduce the likelihood that you're going to get killed or other things. This is what somebody looks like they're lying. This looks like somebody's telling or being dishonest about their name or stories incorrect. Here's some body language, here's some behavior, pre-attack indicators, all that shit. So we're all on the same page here, but let's start going over the list. Do it. I got the list in front of me.
Okay. All right.
I'll read them. You could talk about them.
I think it's like 38 or something.
We'll try
like
to
that.
Spend, you know, we'll do, we'll try to spend 2 minutes each on each of these and try to unpack them a little bit so people can understand. Yeah. So here's the first one. The most dangerous part about being a cop is that it's usually not that dangerous. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I think that in itself is what breeds the complacency mindset. I think we could go to almost all of the calls we go to with no gun and no body armor, and the person is going to comply because most people are compliant with police. And so the odds are in the favor of the person who's complacent, because then they can give off that air of bravado and look like, oh, they're all confident. They know what they're doing. And rather than looking like a tryhard, which a lot of cops look down on, it's kind of like when you're in high school, the person who's trying to look cool is not cool. I noticed that in law enforcement, the person who's trying to be tactical, a lot of times people blow that off as the person who's, you know, tactical Timmy or whatever, you know, insulting name you want to give the person. But the person who is not and is being complacent, oftentimes it they can do that because most people are compliant and most people are not going to fight us. So that's where that comes from. It breeds that complacency.
Bad tactics work when there's no bad guy. I like this.
Yeah. So like when you're going to that house to clear it out, you can basically do whatever you want if there's no bad guy in there. And a lot of times there's not. A lot of times you clear that house out, it's empty until it's not. And so I tell people, and I think this is one of the other rules or guidelines, but act like there's someone in there every single time. If there's someone in there, it'll keep you safe. And then if there's no one in there, it'll give you a good training rep.
Don't blindly follow or spread tactical dogma. And don't trust tactics, techniques that haven't been vetted through force on force. Not only does force on force pressure test tactics and techniques, it also gives those who plan to use them the confidence that they work. Use of blue guns without man marking rounds cannot replace true force on force training.
Yeah, so I think there is a lot of tactical dogma in the law enforcement community. It's just people regurgitating things they were told, despite the fact that there might be contradictory evidence to what they're saying. One in particular I can think of is using the slide stop release on a handgun to release the slide. You know, you're always told, like, don't do that. You'll lose all your fine motor skills. But somehow I'm going to lose all my fine motor skills, but somehow I'm going to be able to press the trigger to the rear like I should, hit the slide or hit the magazine release in the first place and insert a rectangular shape into a rectangular hole, but I can't train to a standard of hitting that slide release. Now, I personally reach over the top and rack the slide. What I'm saying is, I think if you train to that standard, you can do it. And there's a lot of other things too. And going on the blue guns versus force on force. In my experience, we used a lot of blue gun training. And the problem with the blue gun training is you're basically playing cops and robbers as kids. Now, it can help, I believe, instill some tactics and train tactics, especially if people are watching you. But you'll notice that immediately when you go to force on force using sim rounds, people change their tactics. And I actually had a sergeant one time. I could not believe he said this. I asked why we don't do more force on force training. And his response to me was he didn't like doing force on force because people change their tactics.
Wow.
And I wanted to be like, well, what do you think they're going to do when there's lead and not paint rounds flying at them? Like, you think all of a sudden they're going to go from blue guns to live rounds and you don't need that transition in between? So yeah, that type of stuff, I cannot stand it. And I wish, and I think it just, a lot of it stems from ego and cops who just don't like to admit when they're wrong. And I think law enforcement use a lot of humility.
I actually have a saying that I might've held up a sign on this when we were doing the sign shit, which I gotta get back to, but it said, humility is a rare trait in law enforcement, but a very powerful one. So that is a superpower for police officers to deploy humility. As a matter of fact, I'd even throw vulnerability in there as well, because I think they go hand in hand. They could be synonymous. I was just giving somebody some advice the other day, and somebody I know expressed frustration of the dating scene. And I said, the dating scene is no different than any scene that you want to have a result. You're going to have to go through the pain to get the prize. You don't get lucky enough to hit the lottery, and it's rare that somebody does. And sometimes even people hit the lottery, they're full of shit. They didn't hit the fucking lottery. They just want you to believe they hit the fucking lottery. So yeah, I get it. It's frustrating to go out Friday and meet people that you don't think are qualified to date you. But guess what? You still got to show up every fucking Friday if you'd like the odds to be in your favor. So yeah. And on top of that, you have to allow people a chance. You may not want to, but you got to have that vulnerability to say, okay, let me see what this feels like. I mean, I'm a business owner, right? There's a lot of vulnerability associated with being a successful business owner in the sense of, I have to take a lot of risk, dude. I have to deploy some trust to people when they're new. And that trust has been betrayed by many people, people that I thought that were my friends or I could at least trust them. And you know, people take advantage of the freedom that we employ here. There's not really a lot of micromanaging going on. It's just like being betrayed by the trust that they were out for themselves. This is a lot of things that, but if I don't employ that vulnerability as an employer, I will never have anybody work here. So I can't let the bad experiences dictate the future. I have to try to remind ourselves of the good experience dictating the future. That's kind of in line with what you said there.
That's good. And I like the lottery analogy too, because also another aspect of the lottery analogy is like, just because you won the lottery doesn't mean you were ready to win the lottery. A lot of people get ruined by winning the lottery. And, you know, going back to that, you know, the whole dating scene thing, it's like, well, maybe you're not finding someone because you're not someone who someone wants to find. Maybe you need to work on yourself. If you keep getting rejected, well, maybe it's not the other people. Maybe it's you.
Well, I think people have criteria. And I think that there's it's a tough scene. Dating's a tough scene. There's no question about it. But the problem is when you don't employ the discipline. It's an art. Dating is an art. There's a discipline to it. I'll probably write a whole episode on that to give people advice. But the discipline essentially comes down to having the discipline to say, this person is not the person I'm going to marry. Although it's harder to leave them now, it will be easier in the long run. So when I have kids and a house and a mortgage and a life together, I didn't build this house on this shitty ass foundation. Mm. Vice versa. Take the pain up front. Have the tough conversations. We don't belong together. Move on. Leave yourself one available for that person who you should be with. And number two, building a house on a strong foundation that can withstand gale force winds. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Taylor, 95% of people fuck this up. So the divorce rate is high because I see it. I know many people that are in relationships they have no business being in, and it's just easier to stay in it, and it progresses. I've had people who are like, how do you know, like literally engaged, like, how do you know if you're in love with somebody? And I'm like, you asking that question reveals that you're not. Because when you're in love with somebody, you will know exactly what it is and don't get it fucking confused. Like, that person is your best friend and you don't want to do anything with anybody else besides that person. They are everything to you. And there is nobody else in the world that could even divert your attention. And that's why it's another thing that's important, right? How about you're with somebody, you have kids, you get married, da-da-da. And then all of a sudden some temptress comes along on either side. And now you found somebody you were really supposed to be married to. You're going to clearly disrupt everybody else's lives, you selfish fuck, right? And the selfishness is not now. Now I implore you to move on and be happy. But I'm saying the selfishness was much earlier when you should have had the discipline to say, this doesn't work for me. But they don't, bro. I've had people call me 2 weeks before their weddings. I don't love her. I don't love him. I'm telling you, because people call me for advice all the time. And I'm like, what are you doing? Call it off. I can't. I put a deposit down. I'm like, you're fucking crazy. And dude, to this day, I know these people. They're married. They have children. And in the back of my head, gosh. I'm like, I know these motherfuckers 2 weeks before getting married. We're fucking safe. And bro, if you want to know how painful it is to not employ the discipline up front, talk to somebody that's gone through the terror and the horror of being fucking married. I'm telling you, right? It's just, it's crazy. I just talked to a guy today. He's like, I married a girl who was hot and she was out of my league. And now I'm paying for it. Now I'm fucking paying for it. Wow. And I'm like, of course you are, dude. There were 700 red flags. You wanted to ignore them because you've never hooked up with a chick that hot. So you ignored the other signs. Like, dude, you can't. Physical attraction is probably, as crazy as it sounds, the most important thing in a relationship, a dating relationship, really. Because everybody at some level is superficial, and good sexual relationships lead to good marriages. There's no question about it. So you really should find this other person significantly attractive physically. We all do the same thing at the inception of meeting somebody. We make an assessment of what we see first before we even give them a chance. Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well. You wanted to comment on relationships, Taylor?
No, I'm good.
Let's go to the next one. Being physically fit. If you do not know what physically fit means, use military physical fitness tests, PFTs, as a metric, USMC, Army, et cetera. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I think that our job in law enforcement is very physical and or can be very physical. Let me rephrase that because oftentimes maybe it's not. But I think it's our responsibility to not have complacency with regards to our physical fitness, whether we have to run to do something or carry something heavy. I think we owe it to ourselves and the other officers and our families to be in appropriate fitness level to be able to do those things. And I think that's lacking quite a bit in law enforcement. I don't understand how federal law enforcement gets away with having fitness standards, but it seems that local law enforcement just can't do it.
Some federal does, not all, believe me. Typically, people who have physical fitness standards for the most part end up being state police agencies. Mm. I mean, let's face fact, you're typically hard pressed to find a fat trooper. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the truth, dude. Like,
it is the truth.
So like, bro, like some of the guys in New Jersey State Police here, they're fucking physical specimens. Not all of them, but you know, you go to a funeral and they usually send 60, 80 guys to funerals to do like they do because they always like to put a nice show on, which is appreciated. And it's not some kind of remark. Dude, it's you might see one or two that got a fucking pot belly, but the rest of them look pretty goddamn physically fit. And to be honest with you, they have a standard that if you can't complete your physical efficiency battery, whatever they call it, they take you off the road.
Wow.
Oh, and by the way, this I know for a fact, you can't get promoted. If you fail your physical efficiency battery, you can't get a promotion.
That's awesome.
Yep. It holds a standard, and unfortunately, standards are going down right now because of low enrollment numbers for police, and they're willing to just sacrifice lives to have people answer fucking phone calls. It's pretty wild. And I think that, as a service calls, not phone calls, I think it's very interesting that there's probably a better solution than dropping our standards. And I think the actual solution is to reevaluate who the police are and what they do and cut out 46% of the bullshit that cops handle that don't need to be a part of.
Right? Yep.
We have technology in place now. Let's do online police reports. You call them with a certain call. Thank you, ma'am. What's your email address? We're going to say the online link. We don't send police officers to that. And then honestly, there's a penalty if you call back and fabricate a story to try to get a cop because you want service. There'd be some kind of legal penalty for fraudulently reporting something. Or you'd have to fall into the statute of that. So I think that's the resolution right now. And the solution is to keep people available for really important stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, focus our shit and what we have left on the things that are the most important.
Yeah, that law enforcement scope creep, I call it, is ridiculous. They're just forgetting the mission of law enforcement. And I think that's where a lot of the tension's coming from in the culture, is just people not understanding and agreeing on what police's job are.
I think that there is a certain, let's take a domestic, for example. I think obviously the criminal justice system is going to require us to come in and take law enforcement action if necessary. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there's a good handful of domestic violence reports that come in where people just want things on paper and they want to talk to somebody. They want any action taken. They've refused to sign a complaint or press charges on the assailant. And if it's not mandatory charges, they don't want to do it. They just want to. I think a lot of that can be served by a civilian who's trained and then at appropriate times bring a police officer in and say, we are qualifying for law enforcement to be a part of this. And that probably cuts down and frees up so many marked units. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the cops want to help. But you have to understand something. What we're dealing with every day is time and time again, repeat, constant domestic violence where we can't get through to a victim. And we honestly don't have the skills or the resources to constantly follow up because we have other things going on. So you'd be surprised how bad people tie the cops up with stupid shit. Seriously, like you think about it, you get tied up on some real dumb shit.
Oh yeah.
I think there's going to have to be other solutions in place. Here's one that we used to have. We used to have reserves, which was great. During our busy hours from 5 to 11, we had probably 6 to 8 marked units of reserve police officers who weren't sent to any calls other than lockouts, loud parties. But the best one was, because we were a busy area, traffic details. So if we had a bad crash, instead of tying up, you know, 6 marked patrol officers, we pull in 6 reserves who didn't have really any law enforcement authority, but were there to help with the other things. Oh, dude, I appreciate these guys to death. And they loved me. I treat them like equals. And I would defend them all the time. They were great. And I just love saying, like, flipping over to their channel. I'm like, hey, Captain So-and-so, do you have anybody available? Dude, they would race to help me because they were so good to me and I was so good to them. And Brody did such a fantastic job. They couldn't do enough for me. And I was able to free up 5-6 units that were blocking a major highway.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And these guys would hang out, bro, like gladly. Like, what can I do for you? I'm going to set up flares. Dude, these guys were, I'm getting chills talking about them because our guys were too fucking cocky to employ this resource and treat these people like human beings because they thought they're just reserves. Like, you fuck you if you ever say it to those guys. Like, mm-hmm. fuck you. That's such bullshit, dude. They're on our team. Guys will always ask me, like, hey, can I come to your class? I'm like, of course, man. You're on our team. You're not some fucking Antifa motherfucker, right? Like, you're on our team. Go to the class. You know, for sure. I want you to know this stuff as well. All right, let's do the next one. Be prepared to die. Don't wait until you're being shot at to soul search answers to existential questions. What happens after you die or regret the last thing you said to a loved ones? You'll want that brain power to stop the threat. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think that it's very easy to, and this is not just police, but to compartmentalize death as a problem for our future self and not really think about it or answer those questions. And I think it's important to think about that ahead of time before you get in that moment, because there's a good chance or a reasonable chance that those thoughts will cross your mind. And I think it's a good idea to go ahead and have answers to that ahead of time.
Next one. Do not let fear of judgment from complacent officers cause you to ignore officer safety. I like this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of peer pressure in law enforcement, especially for new officers. They're trying to prove themselves to the other officers, and that's just natural and, like, you know, tribe type mentality. The problem is you have those older officers that have been doing it long enough and have gotten more and more complacent, because once again, the most dangerous part of this job is that it's really not that dangerous. So the odds are in their favor to be complacent, and the younger officers see that. And so with all the judgment that goes on, like you were just talking about with those reserve units, judgment and the gossip and the rumor mill is so toxic in law enforcement. And so those officers are trying not to give off an impression that they're scared or that they're nervous, or the dispatch asks them if they need another unit. And they're like, well, I'll advise if I need another unit. It's like, when will you advise exactly? When you're getting when you're getting beat on the ground? Like, when exactly are you going to advise? Go ahead and ask for the other unit. If they have them, if they're offering them, they probably have them. Yeah, just encourage, like, especially junior officers, not to let that fear of judgment from the senior officers cause them to become complacent, because it just becomes a positive feedback loop, and then the just cycle repeats itself.
I'll tell you a funny story. I'm in muster. I'm new, right? So me and my partner, Carlos, we get on the, we get hip to the game a little bit. We realize we got to start asking people out of cars on traffic stops. It's like one of the early days of Dennis Bonino learning police work. I'll never forget this guy, old guy, right? Old motherfucker. And in muster, before it starts, he says, hey, so what's with you and Carlos having people come out of cars on traffic stops, right? Laughing. And I said, you guys aren't going to believe this. And I'm like a young guy addressing this. I go, me and Carlos have literally discovered this thing that's never been seen here before, ever, in the history of this police department. And it was crazy. We thought when we came here, we would find it, but we didn't. And we went out to another agency and we found this gem and we're bringing it here. And they're looking at me. I go, you want to know what it is? It's called police work. And nobody here has been doing it since I've gotten here. Actually, matter of fact, most of you don't even know what it is. And dude, it's crazy because the guys where I worked who were credited with being the hard chargers, oh, they were not good. But compared to everybody else, they were friends. I remember asking a guy, this is no bullshit. I was asking around, looking for answers at my agency. So I said, hey, you know, who's a hard charger? Anybody specialized? He was like, oh, go ask this guy. So they said, this is literally the mentality. So I go to him, this guy. And he's a high-ranking guy there now. And I said, hey, I heard that you and so-and-so used to be proactive. Yeah. Right? Like, real proactive. Yeah, we're proactive. Blah, blah, blah. Right? This guy's in the detective bureau now. Juvenile division. So I said, what did you guys do? We go up to the, here, you want to learn how to get shit, bro? Go up to the liquor store, sit across the street in the church parking lot. And as people pull into the liquor store, run their plates, because people who are shitheads, they drink alcohol. And I'm not kidding you. 2 hours later, I'm at the fucking church. This is a revelation. I'm sitting there. on my MDT running random plates. People are pulling into the liquor store, and about an hour or two into it, I'm like, this can't be right. You know, this cannot be correct. Then another officer said, well, we have a prison in our town. Go check what time the visiting hours are at the prison and run traffic out there, run random plates as people are coming in. Cause you know, they're coming to visit their family. And I'm like, this can't be morally correct. And that was really the advice of what proactive policing was in a town that I forgot what the statistics was, but I think we made up for like half the calls in the county, in a big county, right? Half the all total calls came from our fucking town. That's how busy we were. And these people were like, go run random plates at a liquor store, right? Like, and bro, you can imagine, it's not a big liquor store. It's like literally maybe every couple minutes a car pulls in and I'm like, oh, there we go, right? I'm like hoping for a jackpot. I'm a young guy. I was a young kid. I'm in my early 20s trying to figure it out. And it's just comical to look back and now and see what people thought police work was. So that's one story. Another one is I talk about in my class about not walking up in a car in a direct line, not touching the trunk, not doing this dumb shit. Why are you guys not walking around the back of your car, first clearing the back behind you, walking around the back? Then if you can slice the pie, look inside the car before you approach the car. People will say to me, hey, how do I approach a car that has really darkly tinted windows? Well, the reality is if you can't get them to roll the windows down, why don't you just continue to slice the pie till you get around to the front and looking through the windshield that's not tinted and approach from the front? Dude, saying things like this blows people's minds. I'm like, yeah. You guys never thought about shit like this, yeah. Right? Why do you think, and dude, I've been criticized. You know, where are you at? I'm in the woods. What are you doing? Literally getting PC to search this car because they don't know where I'm at. I'm employing the fucking wood line next to me. Mm-hmm. And I'll give it an extra minute or two. We'll say they think I'm like running my checks before I get out of the car. And I'm watching them like literally handing drugs to each other from the darkness, right? Yep. And now with body-worn camera videos, you can literally record them. Passing drugs and guns back and forth and hiding shit. You've literally built your PC on employing a different tactic for what you've been looking for. It's so fucking, dude, I've stood next to people's cars, not announced my presence and heard them talking from a lawful vantage point of what was going on. I go, did you take that shit? You put it in your bra. I told you put it in your fucking bra. And I'm like, it's good. We're done already.
Yeah.
You know? So, but people are worried about judgment and the criticism of others. I agree with you 100%. Next one. Ego will not stop bullets. Leave it at home so it does not weigh you or others down.
Yeah, this kind of feeds into the previous, I mean, a lot of them feed into each other. So yeah, it's like, yeah, your ego is not, it's not making you bulletproof. So that false bravado that you're using, because statistically speaking, nothing's going to happen. So you can act that way. It may work whenever nothing happens, but whenever something does happen, you're going to have to fall back on good tactics.
Call out every traffic stop. You might be stopping them for an expired registration, but they might think you're stopping them for the dead body in the back. If you wait until you need backup, it's too late. Bad guys don't care if you are an interdiction unit or a traffic unit. And bullets do not care if you are on SWAT.
Yeah, there's a lot of officers in my agency don't call out traffic stops, and most of them are traffic units. And I think
they're the worst, bro. Yeah, the worst.
They just get in this mindset of that's all they're doing and that's all there is. And not thinking that's like, well, yeah, they might be speeding and doing something else in addition to that. Maybe they're speeding for a reason. They're going to go hide something. Or so I can't stand it. I cannot stand it because, you know, once you call that unit out or once you call it out when it's too late, it's too late or probably too late.
Historically, I've seen guys that were detailed to the traffic units that try to avoid arrests like the plague. Like they don't want nothing to do with arresting people. Mm-hmm. They just want to do their tickets and go home. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys let motherfuckers go on warrants because they didn't feel like doing it. I've seen people like find drugs and like just charge them with a minimal possession charge. And I'm like, you realize that's distribution amount, right? And they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, it is. That's 2 ounces of cocaine on a traffic stop. Like, I don't want to go into all that. I'm just going to charge him with over whatever, how many grams of cocaine there is. And it was like, I'm like, you realize you were in a school zone. You did it. Like you realize all that shit. 2 ounces of coke is a nice little pop on a traffic stop inadvertently. And they're like, dude, I don't fucking do this kind of shit. Real talk, bro. No bullshit. I used to get that stuff. Wow. Your seatbelt is statistically more likely to save your life and keep you in the fight than your body armor. So wear one, but not the other. Question
mark? So why wear one and not the other?
Okay, so why wear one and not the other? My apologies.
Yeah. And I actually added on that one too. You may not have in yours because I've been revising this. I added to that, if you can defeat a level 3 retention holster under stress, then you can defeat a seatbelt.
And they actually make seatbelt extenders too. If you're a larger mm-hmm. guy, you can wear an extender. If you want to know what they look like, watch a fat person on a plane.
Yeah.
What's an incentive to lose weight when you got to go on a plane and go, ma'am, do you have an extender?
Yeah.
Because you're so fucking fat that you can't fit into a fucking seatbelt on a plane.
Yeah.
I see it all the time, bro. I fly a lot. When units are available and dispatch asks if you would like another officer, say 10-4. If you wait until you need them, it'll probably be too late.
Yeah. Once again, I think that goes to the fear of judgment from other officers. If they ask if you want another, what's the harm? I mean, that other officer is going to miss, they're going to have to pause their Netflix episode and drive to you. I mean, it's when you're screaming on the radio that they're fighting, that's when it's too late. And so I wish that more guys would ask for the other officer. And the benefit of that too, is those going back to those junior officers that are coming into the department, it'll show them that that's the norm. And then it'll give them the liberty to ask as well and not fear judgment from other officers to ask for backup or to say that they do need backup.
There is a historic video. It's very old, but it's one where I think he's a county sheriff or local police officer, stops 3 Mexican national males who overtake him on the traffic stop, take his gun and execute him on the side of the road.
Is that where they take their hats off, like right before they fight him?
I forget, dude. I haven't seen it. I went to police academy in 2001, then 2004, then back in 2005. I think I saw it in my first police academy, not any other since then. I think it's been on TV, like on when mainstream television was, they probably played it on some of those shows. Yeah. So I know it was in Texas, I believe. And I remember being told distinctly, this guy was known for telling people he was a lone ranger. Right. He did not want any help. He does not need any help. And ultimately paid for it with his life. He got overtaken by 3 people. And bad tactics, just bad tactics.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that we have to look at things like that too.
Well, that he was able to do that, be that lone ranger, because most of the time people were compliant and didn't matter until it did.
Mm. Don't let that game on your phone or that Netflix episode be the reason you do not back someone up. That's a good one. I've had people listen before you answer this one. I've had people literally drive past my traffic stops and I didn't see if I was okay. People that I work with on my shift. And I remember one time we had 2 guys that came from days to our afternoon shift or nights from the other side to our afternoon shift. And me and my friend Mike brought these 2 guys out, like met up with them. And we're like, where the fuck are you guys? And they're like, what? Because on days they don't back each other up. But on afternoons, it's a whole different animal, right? So like what? I'm like, look, you guys don't have to be fucking hard chargers, but your ass better be here or moving my way when you hear a traffic stop. You're not doing anything anyway proactively. You're available. So start rolling my way. It's a fucking job. You get paid. My life's on the line. I'm stopping bad people. You know that. You need to start coming here. And they were just like, we didn't know. And I'm like, that's fucking insane.
You have a radio.
I'm just saying, like, that was like, they were so indoctrinated in the culture of day shift that you do your job. You hang out, wait for your next job to come out. Don't go and back each other up unless somebody calls for it. Fucking dude, that stuff used to drive me nuts. Replace that little voice that says, it's probably nothing, with one that says, it might be something. I would actually jump in here and say, this is going to kill me.
Wait, what are you saying? You say replace it with the voice that says it's going to kill me?
Let me read it again. Replace the little voice that says, it's probably nothing, with the one that says, it might be something. You could elaborate on that, and then I'll jump in as well.
Yeah, so the alarm call you're going to at 6:30 a.m. when Chick-fil-A is opening, it probably is just the employees that forgot to hit the correct alarm code. Or it might be someone who planned that because they knew that cops would have that mindset on their way to an alarm call at that time. So I think it never hurts just to have the mindset of it might be something. And going ahead and switching it on, switching your mind on to that possibility gets you ahead of the game when you get there, instead of just being like, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna go take care of this real quick. And that's when I noticed that a lot of officers disregard other units and they send 2 units to an alarm call and they know it's probably just the employee who forgot to put in the right code or the code changed. And so they disregard that other officer because they want to go on break or whatever. And they say, I'll advise when I need another. It's like, no, you won't. It'll be too late.
It's kind of lines up with something that I say a lot, and it's treat every motor vehicle stop as if you were going to die and you'll probably live. And again, that doesn't mean taking your fucking gun out, put it in people's heads when you're a typical traffic stop. Mm-hmm. It means when you stop that car, imagine that you're going to be one of those statistics. They're going to show your dash cam video footage. How would you treat it differently in a tactical sense if that's how you approach it, knowing you were going to die?
Yeah.
I think that applies for literally everything. I think people need to start really being thoughtful about what the routine looks like, because Absolutely. How many times do we see police officers walking out of the main door at headquarters and being executed? Do not wait until someone is shot or stabbed to attempt to remember how to apply a tourniquet, chest seal, or pack a junctional wound, because you may only have the rest of their life to figure it out. Watch North American Rescue tutorials on YouTube beforehand if you need a refresher.
Yeah, I went to a TAC Med instructor course. And that was actually in the process of when I was developing this list. And it was just like during that period, I was thinking about like medical related complacency. And so I think that that is oftentimes the case where we go through our annual refresher, which usually just a PowerPoint. It's not actually training. I hate when people call PowerPoint training. A PowerPoint is not training. And so I really wish more people would refresh themselves on a regular basis on those things. And because like I said, you may have the rest of their life to figure it out when they're sitting there bleeding out.
I think you're giving a really good gift to the world, dude. And I'm glad you didn't wait for somebody to pick you to do this. You just did it on your own.
I appreciate you saying that.
This is a cool episode that we did today. It went very, very fast. It's almost 5:30 already.
Oh, dang. I didn't realize what time it was.
Yeah. So, dude, I'm going to end it here.
Okay.
But with the invite back to do the second half. So if you're a listener to this podcast, which there's a lot of them now, there will be a second half of this. So make sure you tune in. We're going to do the second page of this shit. It's really cool and it's super important. And we know that it's important for people here. So, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on here today and doing this.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.